From the Jennifer and Ted Stanley Studios in Boston and PRI, this is Living on Earth. I'm Steve Kerwood. While many news organizations look at the recent elections in terms of blue and red, Democrat and Republican, we consider the results in terms of green, how the voting relates to environmental concerns. It turns out that in 2014, there were plenty of environmental measures on ballots across America, and we'll have more on them in just a few minutes. But right now, we turn to the Daily Climate's Peter Dykstra for an ecological assessment of the races. Hi there, Peter.
Well, hi, Steve. It definitely was a clear message in this election. And after unprecedented spending by the environmental side and unprecedentedly strong organization by environmental groups in the election campaign, there's very little to show for it from Tuesday's election. Anybody who cares about such things already knows the headlines. The Republican Party reclaimed a majority in the Senate. Democrats lost some presumably safe governor's races and more.
Right. And all that spending you mentioned came from deep-pocketed activists like Tom Steyer. And you wrote about this in the Daily Climate before the election.
I did. And Tom Steyer is the venture capitalist turned political force on climate and other green issues. He made for an interesting story, but it's one that inside the Beltway journalists consistently got wrong. There were numerous pre-election stories pairing Steyer against the much deeper pockets of the Koch brothers. It created a nice narrative, but a false balance, and some people fell for the line that the political power of big oil had finally met its match in the political power of big green. It's not going to happen anytime soon, folks. The power and reach on the environmental side can't begin to match the dough behind the anti-science, anti-regulatory, anti-environment causes. And to me, there's one example of this that makes a far more interesting story than either the Kochs or Tom Steyer.
Oh, and who's that?
Joe Ricketts, the founder of TD Ameritrade, co-owner of the Chicago Cubs, and the money behind a PAC called Ending Spending. Ricketts focused millions on Senate races, much of it in Michigan, New Hampshire, and Georgia. In particular, the Michigan race ads criticized Gary Peters over the Keystone XL pipeline. He also ran attack ads against Gene Shaheen in New Hampshire and Michelle Nunn in Georgia, all Democrats. Nunn lost, but Peters and Shaheen were two of the Democrats' bright spots. So Joe Ricketts, in the fashion of his Chicago Cubs, lost 2 out of 3.
Okay, Peter, but let's stay with the Keystone Pipeline for a moment. Republicans have made approval of this pipeline to carry tar sands oil from Canada to refineries along the Gulf of Mexico a top priority.
Yes, and in their victory speeches this week, the new Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Republican Party Chair Reince Priebus made it clear that they'll push for Keystone, even as some in the oil industry seem to be backing away from tar sands. Meanwhile, out in Nebraska, where there's a pitched battle over Keystone, one of its biggest congressional boosters lost a close race. Lee Terry, an 8-term Republican, was surprised by a challenge from Democrat Brad Ashford. But in reality, control of the Senate might be more symbolic than anything else. The Republican-controlled House the past few years has gotten obsessive over things like Obamacare, passing the same repeal bill over and over again, knowing full well that it won't survive the Senate or a presidential veto. The Senate may now jump into the same trench, passing symbolic bills to defund or maybe even abolish EPA, to build Keystone and other environmental issues.
Yeah, Peter, but you just pointed out Obama has that veto pen.
Yes, and the risk is that this election sends a message that the Democrats didn't see much positive, and the increasingly environmentally hostile Republicans didn't see much of a downside in taking sides on the environment. If President Obama reads those political tea leaves, the Keystone Pipeline is as good as built. But if, like a lot of second-term presidents, he wants to leave a legacy that in this case includes climate change action, he might kill the pipeline or at least leave it in the lap of the next president.
Thanks, Peter. Come back a little later in the show, and we'll talk a few Election Day specifics.
Okay.
We turn now to the environmental initiatives on the ballots in some states, but there wasn't much of a pattern to the results. Maine and Michigan took on hunting. In Maine, voters said it's okay for hunters to use bait when hunting bears. But Michigan rejected wolf hunting in a vote that's likely to wind up in court, as the legislature had already approved that method of population control. Massachusetts refused to extend container deposits to bottled water, while Berkeley, California approved a soda tax. And the question of labeling GMO ingredients was back again. Living on Earth's Naomi Ehrenberg has been looking at what happened.
There were two statewide referenda to require GMO labeling, each of which failed. In Colorado, 66% weighed in against Proposition 105, as opposed to only 34% in favor. The vote in Oregon, though, was so close that Measure 92 was not decided until Wednesday afternoon, and then with less than 51% bringing it down. I might add, Steve, that both sides broke spending records for Oregon ballot measures.
Interesting. So what about the two other GMO-related votes?
These were countywide initiatives. Northern California's Humboldt County has, I'm quoting here, prohibited the propagation, cultivation, raising, or growing of genetically modified organisms. Now, farming is not the big business in Humboldt that it is in other parts of California. That said, the other successful measure was in an important agricultural region. It's Maui County in Hawaii, which might be best known as a tourist destination, but actually, that's an important agribusiness research center for Monsanto and Dow, and that's for the same reason it's a vacation spot, the weather. The growing season lasts all year long, and both Dow AgroSciences and Monsanto are heavily invested in seed development there.
Naomi, you mentioned big money involved in Oregon's close vote. What about Maui?
Well, we know that GMO supporters spent nearly $8 million, or over $300, for every vote against the ban.
And all that money wasn't enough?
Mm-mm. It was very close. The ban passed by only a couple of percentage points. It seems as though grassroots organizing was what made the difference. Residents in Maui County took to the streets, they carried signs and knocked on doors, and they called friends to talk about Monsanto and Dow's agricultural practices.
So what exactly did the yes voters get?
They got a temporary ban on genetically engineered crops, which stays in effect until the county council reviews safety studies to determine the potential environmental or health threats of GMO plants. And the research is being paid for, you ready for this, Steve? By the seed companies.
Why am I not surprised? Thanks, Naomi. Well, other ballot questions took on land use and the protection of natural resources. Living on Earth's Helen Palmer has been checking up on them.
Yes, several states had these issues on the ballot: New Jersey, Florida, North Dakota, Louisiana, Alaska. Most of these initiatives were successful. Florida's Amendment 1 to devote a third of excise taxes to wildlife, fish, forests and the like. Louisiana's Amendment 8, that ensures the money in the state's artificial reef fund really goes to building reefs in the Gulf. And in New Jersey, voters approved an amendment to guarantee funding to buy and preserve open space and farmland.
Those all sound very green.
Yeah, but some environmentalists worry that the New Jersey measure could drain money from the other environmental priorities, like cleaning up toxic waste sites in the Garden State. North Dakota's Measure 5 would have devoted some oil revenue to clean water, parks, and wildlife, but it was thumbs down for that. And Maine and Rhode Island passed successful bond measures for water, wetlands, and other environmental projects. And two-thirds of Californians voted to devote over $7 billion to improving the Golden State's water supply and quality.
Nothing like a drought to concentrate the mind and loosen the purse strings.
Yes, and finally, Alaskans voted to give the state legislature greater veto power over mining projects in Bristol Bay. You'll remember, Steve, that's where the controversial pebble mine's proposed, and critics say that threatens the bay's massive salmon fishery.
Thanks, Helen.
Sure.
Now, there were a number of bans on hydraulic fracturing for natural gas on the ballots. Living on Earth's Emmett Fitzgerald has been following those.
Yeah, the one that's getting the most attention is Denton, Texas, where 59% of the electorate voted to ban fracking from the city. It's a pretty shocking result when you consider that Denton is a solidly Republican town in the middle of the Barnett Shale Formation, where fracking technology was first developed. The oil industry spent nearly $700,000 fighting the bill, but they were defeated by a grassroots campaign of locals who were tired of the noise and the fumes from over 270 natural gas wells operating within city limits. Anti-fracking activists around the country are hailing this as a victory in the heart of oil country.
Now, where else was fracking voted on in this election?
Well, four towns in Ohio voted on fracking bans, although only one actually passed. That was Athens, Ohio. And then there was California. Earlier this year, the California Senate narrowly rejected a statewide moratorium on fracking. But in this election, it was back on the ballot in a number of counties. San Benito and Mendocino counties voted to ban fracking, while Santa Barbara voters gave it the go-ahead.
Now, I hear there was another interesting local race in California. Tell me what happened in Richmond.
Well, during this campaign cycle, the oil company Chevron poured $3 million into local races there. A lot of that money went to ads attacking politicians who have been critical of Chevron's refinery in Richmond. The refinery is the largest employer in the city, but many people are concerned about safety standards and the impacts on public health. A fire at the refinery in 2012 sent 15,000 Richmond residents to the hospital with respiratory problems. In their effort to elect industry-friendly candidates, Chevron created its own local media outlet, the Richmond Standard, which pumped out pro-refinery stories throughout the election cycle. But in the end, this elaborate and expensive strategy backfired, as the city elected a slate of progressive refinery critics, including new mayor Tom Butt.
Thanks, Emmett, and we'll get back to you later in the program with more about fracking. But now Peter Dykstra joins us again with some more observations on the midterm elections and the environment. Peter, there was some big news for an American political environmental dynasty last Tuesday, huh?
There was. Mark Udall lost a close re-election bid to Colorado Congressman Cory Gardner. His cousin Tom Udall won re-election to the Senate in New Mexico. Their respective dads, Mo and Stuart Udall, were environmental champions in the last half of the 20th century. Mo as a congressman and a presidential candidate, Stuart as interior secretary for Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. But Mark Udall's defeat was one of the bigger Senate losses for the Democrats. It was far from the only one, though.
Hey, Peter, let's talk a little bit more about something you mentioned earlier. There doesn't seem to have been a downside for members of Congress who are downright hostile to environmental protection.
Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, who has called climate change a hoax, had token opposition and won re-election by almost 40 percentage points. Lamar Smith, the chair of the House Science Committee, who calls himself a skeptic on climate change, but actually he talks a pretty good denial game too, ran unopposed. Now, both the Senate and House committees that deal with science, environment, and climate will be chaired by folks who just can't be bothered with science. And while some fierce environmental opponents got through without serious election opponents, even some Democrats ran their campaigns like they'd rather be photographed next to a rail car full of hydrocarbons than next to Barack Obama. Allison Lundergan Grimes tried to out-coal Mitch McConnell to score votes in pro-coal eastern Kentucky, but McConnell ended up winning easily. In Louisiana, Senator Mary Landrieu, another defender of hydrocarbons on the Democrat side, finished second and faces an uphill fight in a runoff vote next month.
So is it retrenchment all the way for environmental priorities?
Quite possibly, but a couple of numbers about this election really struck me. First, by now, I'm sure we're all already missing the flood of blood-curdling attack ads. The Center for Public Integrity calculated that the U.S. Senate races alone spawned, get this number, 908,000 TV ad placements. And that's just the broadcast station. It doesn't include cable TV. That's a lot of money drawn out of big spenders, courted by politicians, then distributed to campaign consultants and TV stations. It doesn't matter what your politics are. It's no way to run a democracy. But here's another one. NBC News polling said that millennial voters, voters under 30, were only 12% of the turnout on Tuesday. Just 2 years ago, under 30 voters were 19% of the total. If you're pushing environmental issues and young voters don't show up, you're in trouble. And what do you think the exit polling told us about climate change this week?
What's that, Peter?
Nothing. There isn't any exit polling on climate change. What are you, crazy? It's not that important to the pollsters. But actually, the Associated Press exit polls did say that climate change is on many voters' minds, but the results don't suggest it was on their ballots.
Thanks so much, Peter. Peter's publisher of Environmental Health News. That's EHN.org and thedailyclimate.org. Talk to you soon.
All right, Steve. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.